Have you ever wanted to play the perfect tabletop game, where story beats run smoothly, and there's no awkward pauses between dice rolls? Yeah, me too. But since that's impossible, I did the next best thing, and novelized my Witcher tabletop game to showcase the story in its cleanest form. The result is this podcast. I'm Jacob Gerstel, and this is Tales from the Witcher. Part audiobook, part actual play, part serialized adventure, and a whole new way to vicariously enjoy tabletop games. Welcome to the world of The Witcher, where monsters roam freely and the continent is once again at war. If you were hoping to follow the plight of Geralt of Rivia, however, I'm not going to be doing that. Instead, I offer you the story of a not-so-merry band of degenerates who are making their way across the continent. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Mid-8. 1. The newcomers stank. Rogild, proprietor of the Cracked Chalice Inn, feared the three of them would scare his customers away. Such fears were unfounded, but his regulars gave the newcomers a wide berth, and not just because of the smell. They were an odd group, Rogild thought, two large men and a slight woman, and all looking gaunter than they should have. Rogild's father, founder of the Cracked Chalice Inn, would have called them road-worn. They shuffled into the common room, bringing the sour stench of stale sweat, dust, and body odor with them, and took a table in the back. They ordered a prodigious amount of food. The biggest newcomer, a hooded man with a red mustache, asked for one of everything. Rogild thought he was joking, but he saw the man's single yellow eye flash balefully. Rogild stopped laughing and set to it. All three ate with gusto, as if they had never tasted food before. Rogild thought he saw tears run down the woman's face as she ate. The bearded man with a webwork of dark veins running up the side of his face asked for more ale. Rogild held his breath to avoid the smell as he delivered two more. At least they'll be paying, Rogild thought, but it gave him little comfort. The newcomers were armed, and who was to say how they felt about the subject of coin? The town guard, and maybe some acolytes, would step in if there was a commotion, true enough, but these newcomers looked like road-worn killers. But perhaps the strangest thing of all to Rogild was that the newcomers didn't talk to each other. They didn't look at each other, didn't laugh, didn't even make a small comment or two. Occasionally one of them burped, but they otherwise ate and drank in silence. As the newcomers finished their meal, the hooded man stood up silently and strode towards the innkeeper. Rogild held his breath. The yellow-eyed man spoke surprisingly well for someone his size. "Do you have a bath?" Rogild thought about what his father, that silver-tongued philanderer, would have said. Then Rogild remembered he was not his father, and said, "Of course, sir. Our bath in the back can accommodate 4, if you also wish." He trailed off, hoping he did not insult the hooded man.
"It'll be cheaper if we bathe together," the bearded one said, approaching the bar.
He sounded tired. The hooded man nodded. The woman laughed and put her dusty boots up on the table. "Have fun, boys." The hooded man grunted and paid for the food, the bath, and a room. The bearded man followed suit. Rogild visibly relaxed when the two left. The woman drained her mug and sauntered over for another round. Rogild held his breath and poured her another. It was only then he noticed the loot strapped to her back. He wondered what his father, that paragon of self-interest, would have said. "Do you play, miss?" "I do." The woman brushed her dirty brown hair with her dirty fingers. "It's my profession, after all." "By the fire, a genuine troubadour." Rogild held back his grin. It had been months since music passed through the town of Kalmak. "You've a knack for timing, miss. I imagine you'll make a lot of coin." The troubadour blinked. "And why's that?" Rogild tilted his head, deciding if she was putting him on. "The summer solstice, miss. It's 3 days hence, after all, and all good celebrations need music." "Summer solstice. Right. Of course." The troubadour's cracked lips split into a smile. "I dare say you're correct on that. I'd see Lord Haemon if I were you. He's no skinflint when it comes to entertainment, especially for a solstice." Rogild wondered what his father, that greedy man, would have added. "Of course, you're always welcome to practice your songs here, miss."
It seemed all the cracked chalice patrons were waiting for her answer. And why not? Most of them hadn't heard music in months either. "Yes, I think I will," the troubadour eventually said. "But first, I'd like to take a bath." "Of course. I think that's best," Rogild said, and meant it. The newcomers stank.
2. The squirrels led them deeper into the forest. Ethramel did his best to discern a path, and his sharp eyes noticed markings at the base of a few trees, pointed in the direction they headed. Carmagnola wouldn't have seen these markings, because he couldn't see at all. Blindfolded, with hands tied at the wrists, the doctor was led along by the silent elf with a squirrel tail hanging from his belt. They walked on foot, per Relu's orders. That was fine with Ethramel. He didn't fancy riding Enye through the dense forest pockmarked with snake holes. Better to follow the Scoia'tael. Not that he had a choice. Alu spoke casually in elder speech. "So the black cloaks are on your trail?"
"Unfortunately," Ethramel responded in his mother tongue.
"Didn't think the invasion would reach Calmec so quickly."
"It's a raiding party. Not sure where their main force is, but I doubt it'll run this close to the Mahakam Mountains. Wouldn't want to risk their neutrality with the dwarves, would they?"
Alu ducked under a branch, which whipped Carmagnola in the face. The doctor flinched, but was urged forward by the squirrel tugging the rope attached to his bonds.
Like a damned horse, Ethramel thought, and couldn't help but smile at the comparison.
"Yes, Nilfgaard wouldn't deign to offend the dwarves," Alu said. "Elves, on the other hand, can be used and tossed away at their convenience." Ethramel understood the bitterness in Alu's voice. After all, he fought for Nilfgaard only 5 years ago in the Vryhead Brigade, famous for its war crimes and the speedy execution of its commanders by the Black Cloaks, only after the Second Northern War ended. The Scoia'tael were similarly betrayed. The Nilfgaardians promised them the elven homeland of Dol Blathana, if they waged guerrilla war against the Northern Kingdoms. The squirrels kept their end of the bargain. Then the Peace of Sintra deemed them subversive elements, and the Scoia'tael were left in the wind, without a home or allies. They've been fighting against all Dwan, northern or not, ever since. But none of that needed to be said. If you were an elf, you understood. So Ethramel simply nodded. Carmagnola tripped on an overgrown root and cursed.
"How much longer?" he wheezed.
His voice retained its ragged rasp. The strip of cloth around his eyes was damp with sweat. "Don't you know, Dwan?" Alu said in the common tongue. "Elves don't keep track of piddling things like time and distance." The elves laughed. Carmagnola tripped and cursed again. They traveled for an hour longer. The forest got a little less dense, and Ethramel saw the ruins. A few solitary and crumbling white walls, yellowed with time. A scattering of stone foundations with roots and plants pushing through. Cracked columns with vines snaked around the base. This elven town was likely beautiful several centuries ago, but nature had reclaimed it. Only upon a second look did the sorcerer see several tents scattered amongst the ruins. The canvas was the color of forest, and blended in well. A few elven faces popped out of the tents. They looked as ashen and gaunt as Ethramel. He tried to count all the squirrels he saw, but gave up. What would be the use?
"Welcome to Blagrin," Alu said, gesturing widely to the ruins.
They stopped near a stone-laid incline that formed a half-bowl in the earth. The shattered remains of benches scored the bowl. Ethramel figured this was once the theater, and thus marked the center of Blagrin. "We'll take care of the horses. You, I imagine, will want food and a bath."
"You read my mind, kin."
Alu motioned to his right. "There's a small spring you can use. We'll have some food prepared." "And the..." Ethramel glanced at Carmagnola. "He'll be taken to a tent and given food, under guard. No bath, though he could certainly use one." Ethramel nodded. That was good enough for him. The spring water looked remarkably clear, like crystal. The remains of a path ringed around its oblong shape, and a few benches remained. Fortunately, no one was around. Ethramel slowly disrobed, wincing at the pinpricks of pain that ran down the burned half of his body. The water was blessedly cool, and dulled the fire immediately. Ethramel dunked his head in the water and opened his eyes. The world took on a bleary disposition. He watched strands of charred hair float past. He ran a hand through the burned half of his scalp, and his hair separated from his head without resistance. He exhaled a few bubbles and returned to the surface. He heard light laughter behind him. A she-elf was sprawled on one of the benches. Ethramel wiped the water from his eyes.
For a moment, he thought he was looking at Enna, owner of the golden blouse from the town of Undying. But closer inspection showed a few key differences. Shorter hair, a few more lines in her face, and a sharper look in her eyes. "You look like you've been through it," the she-elf said. Ethramel nodded. "I assume a Dwan caused you such pain?" Ethramel shook his head. "One of our own, actually." "Oh, did it hurt?" "It would be strange if it didn't." "No." The she-elf shook her head. "Did getting betrayed by one of our own hurt?" The sorcerer submerged the bottom half of his face, thinking. He blew a few bubbles and stood back up. "More than I thought it would, yes. Now isn't that interesting?" The she-elf crossed her legs and leaned forward. She dressed like every other elf in the Scoia'tael, in forest green cloth and leather. "I'd prefer to know what you're getting at, Shenny." "Perceptive." The she-elf smiled, and somehow it made her look older. "Never mind, it doesn't matter. I hear you have a letter from my sister. Your man Alu took it. I assume you've read it." "Not yet." Shenny stood up and stretched. "I'll wait for you before I read it. I have a flair for the dramatic. Take your time. Alu will show you my tent when you're ready." And with that, she was gone. Ethramel sighed and created a fireball in his palm. He submerged his hand in the water, and the flame was quietly snuffed out. 3. The water bubbled. Jeremiah took the cauldron from the hearth and dumped it into the bath. It really was big enough for four to sit comfortably in, and enclosed in a small shack attached to the inn, for privacy. Zevo took off his cloak and armor with practiced efficiency, and left it next to the door. He removed his eye patch as well, and his damaged left cornea contracted at the sudden light. Jeremiah caught a glimpse of the Witcher's mangled left eye, and the three jagged scars that ran down it, and looked away. Zevo blinked and descended into the bath, releasing an involuntary sigh of relief. When Zevo was 18 and about to leave Harren Kedic for the path, his bear mentor Sigurd gave him some advice. "Enjoy the little things in life when you can," Sigurd had said. "Who knows when, or if, you'll get to enjoy it again." The ancient surly bastard had been right, of course. Still, Zevo hoped he'd get to enjoy a bath again, one with better company. He imagined Jeremiah felt the same. Jeremiah dumped one more cauldron of hot water into the bath. The craftsman undressed quickly and got in. He submerged his head and ran his fingers through his wet beard. The two made eye contact briefly, then looked away. Silence permeated the room, as thick and cloying as the steam. That was all right with Zevo. He was used to long stretches of silence, having spent most of his life alone on the path. The craftsman, on the other hand, would break sooner or later. It didn't take long. Jeremiah coughed.
"Those were some friends you had."
The Hansa, he meant. Zevo's erstwhile family for a few years, some 3 decades past. In truth, the Witcher didn't know what he expected from them. They were bandits, after all, intentionally thrown together to kill.
Aye, they were something. But they wouldn't have bothered us if the elf wasn't there.
Jeremiah nodded.
True enough. Seems like you two always bring trouble.
If you have something to say, I suggest you say it plainly.
I just did.
Silence settled again. Zevo thought to leave, but decided against it. He was enjoying one of the little things in life, and he'd be damned if he ended it early. The craftsman couldn't handle the silence, and broke yet again.
You've got a lot of scars. Fitting for a witcher.
Aye.
Zevo was so used to the scars he didn't even see them anymore. A deep bite mark on his shoulder, a jagged line running across his ribs from a sword, the claw marks trailing down his damaged left eye, small circular punctures, like starbursts, from crossbow bolts. He forgot where most of these scars originated.
But there's one that looks unique.
Jeremiah pointed to Zevo's stomach.
Must have quite a tail attached to it.
The Witcher frowned and looked down. 5 cuts that crisscrossed like a star rested over his belly. Now that was a scar he would never forget, as much as he would like to.
It does, but it wouldn't be fair to share a story without hearing one in return.
Jeremiah chuckled.
Fair. I believe I briefly told you about this one.
He motioned to the darkened webwork of veins that ran along the left side of his face, his neck, and his shoulder.
And Arrakis did it.
I recall, Zevo said, though he had forgotten.
In service of Duke Haggard of Molderwood. This may surprise you, but I used to live on the streets of Vengerberg.
I thought you were a knight.
I grew up in a knightly family, yes,
Jeremiah snapped,
but they all died when I was young, so I took to banditry to survive.
Seems like I always fall in with bandits, Zevo thought. You think I'd have learned my lesson by now.
Duke Haggard saw use for my skills,
Jeremiah continued,
and hired me for petty tasks, things a respectable Edonian duke couldn't ask his own men to do. I proved useful, and was allowed to accompany him on a hunt. Turns out there was an Arrakis terrorizing the local woods, and the damn thing near killed Haggard. I saved his life, at the cost of...
He again pointed to his scars.
But it paid off. Haggard, to show his gratitude, sponsored my apprenticeships. I owe everything I am today to that man.
I know who to blame then, Zevo thought. He supposed it was his turn, so he said, I was 18 and just joined the path. My first jobs were boring and paid little, so I took a job with a bandit to plunder some elven ruins. Zevo stroked his mustache. This was a mistake. The bandit set me up, and I was captured by a sorcerer, Stesko Dror. He wanted to see what made witchers like we are. He experimented on me, and at one point wanted to see if witchers' guts were different from everyone else's. Hence, Zevo tapped at the star-shaped scar and laughed. Turns out everyone's guts are the same color. Anyways, I was able to escape, and I haven't seen the sorcerer since. I hope he's dead. Jeremiah nodded, and the silence returned. This time, it remained unbroken. They cleaned up, got dressed, and returned to the inn. Jeremiah excused himself to take a nap, Cedra left to take her own bath, and Zevo ordered another drink. He sat alone at a table, wondering what to do next. Getting to Mahakam seemed the wisest move. The mountain dwarves had always remained neutral in the northern wars, and were never attacked. Plus, Zevo had a good relationship with dwarves. Always had. Case in point, he noticed two dwarves watching him at another table. Zevo nodded slightly in their direction, and returned to his own thoughts. He scarcely had two more sips before one of them approached. The dwarf took a seat and said, Master Witcher? Zevo raised an eyebrow. The dwarf spoke at a higher pitch than he expected. Likely a female, then. It was always difficult for Zevo to tell, as dwarven women grew their beards just as well as the men. Indeed, sometimes better.
Yes? How can I help you?
Well, we were hoping. The dwarf licked her lips and held out a hand. My name's Shoshan, by the way.
Zevo of Kavir. You need a monster killed?
Well, I hope not, Shoshan said. You see, my two children, Bernard and Nerma, a boy and a girl, twins, disappeared a week ago.
Sounds like a matter for the town guards.
They listened to us at first, but didn't pursue it any further once they saw the tracks leading into the forest. Said it wasn't their business to go down there.
The second dwarf approached just as cautiously and put his hands on Shoshan's shoulders. We know why. If it was a human child, they would have at least looked.
The dwarf blushed and looked down.
Forgive my manners. I'm Rysok of Mahakam. Zevo of Kavir. They disappeared a week ago, you said?
Aye, Shoshan said. Disappeared in the middle of the night. No broken doors or windows. Bernard and Nerma just left. But it's so unlike them. They're good children, and would never venture out at night.
Please, Master Witcher, Rysok said. No one'll help us. There's Andregas in that forest, and time's running out. Will you? I'll take a look, Zevo said. But I can't make any promises.
Thank you.
Shoshan grabbed the Witcher's hands. Her own hands were leathery and calloused.
We'll pay what we can. It's not much, but...
We can discuss it later. I'll take a look first.
Cedra returned, hair still wet from the bath. She walked with a spring in her step, and sat on a table in the center of the room. She tuned her lute and, with a nod at the innkeeper, started playing. The melody was slow and sonorous, the lyrics fittingly melancholy. Everyone, Shoshan and Rysok included, watched the troubadour intently, but if she was nervous, she didn't show it. Zevo figured now was as good a time as any to leave. A fresh breeze greeted the Witcher as he stepped outside. It was midday, and the summer heat had not yet arrived.
It will, though, he thought. It always does after the solstice.
Kalmek looked like any other mountain town. The buildings were low to the ground and sturdy, built of rough-hewn stone. Dwarves and humans intermingled well enough, and the town guards looked bored. A typical mountain town. Indeed, the only thing that stood out was the large white cathedral at the center of Kalmek. It towered over the squat buildings, and its spire jutted over the town walls. Zevo saw four plumes of black smoke rising near it,
from lit braziers, no doubt. He had seen similar cathedrals before. The Church of the Eternal Fire enjoyed regularity in all things, including its architecture. Zeva was mostly familiar with the regularity of the Church's distrust, of elves and mutants especially. Zeva made a point to walk in the opposite direction, towards the southern gate. "Oi, look who it is!" The two uneducated guards that greeted him and Cedra were still on watch. "Bored of Calmec already, Witcher?"
"Very much so," Zeva thought. He said, "Have you heard anything about two dwarven children disappearing? Would have been a week ago."
"Aye, we heard of it," the second guard said. "Sad business. Went off into the woods. Likely the Andregas got 'em. Grinholm says they're repopulating their old nests, and I'll likely be a nuisance if we don't."
"Did anyone say anything the night they disappeared?"
"No," the first guard said, "but we wasn't on watch, and the ones that were said they didn't see nothing. Between you and us, Witcher, they was likely asleep at the post."
"Might be the work of the witch in the woods," the second guard said. "Witch in the woods?"
The second guard picked at his teeth. "Aye, everyone knows about the witch in the woods. Anytime something foul befalls Calmec, it's the witch's doing. Crops fail, witch in the woods. Trade with Mahakam doesn't pan out, witch in the woods. Cobbler's wife catches him in bed with a milkmaid, witch in the woods made him do it."
The guards brayed like donkeys.
Zeva sighed. An Andrega infestation and a witch in the woods. Not to mention the Nilfgaardian raiders and the Hansa still hunting them on the road. Zeva could think of a dozen reasons to remain safely behind Calmec's stone walls. He glanced back at the Church of the Eternal Fire. That was a pretty good reason to leave. He looked back at the cracked Chalice Inn, and thought of the dwarven couple inside. That was a pretty good reason, too. Besides, he had just enjoyed some of the little things in life.
"Open up the gate," Zeva said. "I'm heading out."
4. Shenny's tent looked like every other tent scattered around the ruins. Alu had pointed him to the right one, and then Ethermel asked which tent Carmagnola was being held in. Alu pointed him to a tent that looked exactly the same, on the other end of the ruins. Ethermel gathered a few of the mushrooms and tubers he did not eat and walked to Carmagnola's tent. The sorcerer was dressed in a forest green raiment that almost fit. There were a few patches across the chest that were lighter green than the rest. Ethermel assumed these covered up arrow holes from fallen comrades, but didn't ask. He unzipped the tent and popped his head inside. Carmagnola sat cross-legged on the bare floor, a plate of unwashed root vegetables in front of him. The elf with a squirrel tail hanging from his belt sat in the corner, bow resting across his legs.
"And how are we this fine day?" Ethermel said.
Carmagnola's face darkened.
"Oh, just great. You elves certainly are hospitable.
Just don't do anything foolish, and they'll let you leave. Calmec's not too far if you take the northern path, I hear."
"The sooner the better,"
Ethermel agreed. A Scoriatel camp was no place for a Dwan, especially one as impulsive as Carmagnola. It would be safer for everyone if he left for Calmec as quickly and peacefully as possible. Ethermel tossed the mushrooms and tubers at the doctor and said, "Must be off. Again, don't do anything foolish." He left before Carmagnola could respond. Shenny's tent was as unadorned as Carmagnola's, save for a small table at the center. The she-elf sat behind it, an open letter in front of her. Now that he got a closer look, Ethermel was certain Shenny and Enna were twins, despite Shenny's leathery look. "You don't clean up that well," Shenny said with a smirk.
"Nor do you. Your sister was far lovelier when I met her."
Shenny shrugged. "The benefits of living a soft life. It's not for everyone. Sit." Ethermel sat. He looked to the open letter.
"I thought you were going to wait for me before you read it."
"I got impatient."
"What happened to your flair for the dramatic?"
"Necessity overrides it," Shenny sighed. "It's not like there's anything useful in here anyway. Just please for me to return to Lonkoff and stay with Enna and give up the squirrel business and wah, wah, wah."
"That's all?" he said.
"It appears so." Shenny ripped up the letter and let the pieces scatter on the table. "Unless Enna shared more information with you."
"Afraid not. Perhaps she'd like your protection. Nilfgaard is on the warpath, after all."
Shenny dismissed the concern with a wave of her hand. "The Blackcloaks avoided the town of Undying in the last two wars. No one wants to conquer a cursed town."
"Well, it's not cursed anymore."
The she-elf's eyes widened a little.
"Oh?
No mention of that in Enna's letter. Don't tell me you lifted a 100-year-old curse." Ethermel wiggled his fingers, flames dancing on each fingertip.
"There actually was a damned sorcerer in that tower, it turned out."
"You surprise me, Ethermel. Yet you don't trust me.
What are you aiming for? Ethramel thought. He said, I've been known to surprise many people. I come from old Dolblathana, after all. Its power runs through my veins. You'll be hunted because of that. People will fear you. Who understands that better than you? Humans will always fear us. Shenny shook her head. Not just humans, our own kind as well. I don't need to tell you what a rarity elven sorcerers are these days, especially males. New Dolblathana may want you back, to use you and your talents, or at least your bloodline. Piss on that. Those bootlickers abandoned us when they bent the knee to the humans. They'll not have me, even if they want me. Shenny smiled, and Ethramel knew he was getting somewhere. Careful with the theatrics, though, he thought. They were quiet, watching each other. The only sound came from the chirping cicadas. Tell me, Kin, do you know what day is coming? No, but I'm sure you'll tell me. Mid-8, Shenny said. The summer solstice. The time to celebrate the last bit of sun and life before winter comes and makes the days shorter and harsher. A time where the barriers between our world and others soften, and the magic of the world blooms, Ethramel added. A most joyous, if brief, time for one like myself. Indeed, and it appears the humans will be celebrating Mid-8 the only way they know how, with gluttony. They'll feast and drink themselves silly as usual. Shenny wiped the scraps of the letter off the table, placed her elbows on the wood, and rested her chin in her hands. What makes this particular Mid-8 interesting, I think, is that a diplomatic delegation from Kedwin will be joining in on Kalmek's festivities. Ethramel tried to hide his surprise. And what's a delegation from the Kedwini kingdom doing this far south? And so close to Nilfgaard, he thought to add. The kingdom of Kedwin was north of Edirne, and the war would not reach their borders for a month or two at least. You didn't hear it from me, Kin, but there's to be a summit of all the major northern powers at Mahakam, a week from now. They'll likely try to cobble together some sort of alliance to repel Nilfgaard. Good luck with that, Ethramel couldn't help but say. There had been such alliances before, but they were shaky at best and dissolved quickly. So this Kedwini delegation is resting in Kalmek before going on to Mahakam. Indeed. And isn't that interesting? If you want something from me, Shenny, I'd prefer you just say what it was. The squirrel narrowed her dark eyes and tilted her chin up slightly. I'll tell you in due time, Kin. But first, I want you to prove something to me.
That'll do it for this episode of Tales from The Witcher. This podcast is written and produced by Jacob Gerstel. The Witcher novels are by Andrzej Sapkowski, The Witcher games are by CD Projekt Red, and The Witcher tabletop RPG is by R. Talsorian Games. The music is by Eric Matias at soundimage.org. Be sure to leave a rating and a review, and to spread the word of this podcast far and wide. You can follow the podcast at TalesWitcherPod on X or at talesfromthewitcher.buzzsprout.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you again next week.